that's really what being a Christian is about. Hannah's done an awesome, awesome job, and I know she's going to continue doing an awesome job. But I just want, I do want to give honor and credit to her. If you can turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. 1 Corinthians 8, 1. I want to take focus on the second half of this verse, but we'll read the whole thing. It says, "Now about food sacrificed to idols, we know that all possess knowledge." And here's what we want to focus on. "But knowledge puffs up, while love builds up." Knowledge puffs up, while love builds up. So tonight I want to speak on the topic, a tale of two builders. You can be seated. I think it's safe to say that we live in a world that's obsessed with knowledge. Everything's about what do you know? Who do you know? What's the next piece of technology you can add to your library of fun gadgets? And what's the most recent discovery that we can take and we can start defining what happened in the past? What else is out there? What can we find? What book are you reading? What are you studying? In short, what piece of knowledge do you have that's going to elevate your status? What about you stands out? Do you know what's happening in the Middle East? Do you know who's saying what in the races for upcoming elections? Did you hear about what so-and-so is going through? Did you hear about what happened to her? Did you hear about what happened to him? Did you hear where they went, what they're doing? On and on our efforts to go to gain more knowledge and to show more knowledge. We all possess knowledge in some form that we can share. Something that your neighbor may not know, that you can tell them, that you can help them with. Now, for whoever's sitting next to Spencer Hicks, if you turn to him and ask him some random fact about any sports team or player in the history of sports, he'll be able to give you something that you never really cared about. If you really want to see something interesting, get Peter Sandin and Josh Manis together and ask them how Jeremy Hill's going to do in the upcoming fantasy season. They both know really well what he's going to do. And they both know that he will do completely different things. So this shows us that not all knowledge should be judged equally. And if you're sitting next to a Bible quizzer, they can probably share some scriptures with you that you don't know. And if you've ever had a chance to, even in passing, talk to Brother Jeff Contreras, you've learned at least something about muskie fishing. You honestly cannot help it. So knowledge isn't bad. Sharing information isn't bad. In fact, seeing how knowledge grows is actually really, really impressive. For example, the invention of the cathode ray tube has led to an immense amount of furthering of knowledge. From making a simple glass tube, filling it with mostly air, and then passing electrical current through it, we've learned all of these following things. We've learned about the existence of electrons, the discovery of the atomic nucleus, the invention of the television and many other imaging-making monitors. It's led to the discovery of X-rays and X-ray machines, the invention of the CT scan, more accurate imaging of fossils. It further led to the invention of X-ray telescopes. And because of X-ray telescopes, it led to the knowledge of black holes and supernovas, which also led to X-ray whatever that word is, led to the discovery of the structure of DNA, which led to the invention of PCR, and that led to the ability to do DNA fingerprinting. That's a lot of knowledge gained by a glass tube. It's pretty impressive. And the growth of knowledge in the last decade has been astounding. See, while this growth is shocking and startling when we look back at the changes over the recent past, it really shouldn't surprise us how much life in the world has changed in even the last 10, 15, 20 years. Daniel 12:4 told us that this would happen a long, long time ago. It said, in the time of the end, many would run to and fro, and knowledge would increase. To put this in perspective, Buckminster Fuller's research showed that until 1900, the year 1900, it took about 100 years for knowledge on the earth to double. That meant for knowledge to increase as much as it was, it took a full 100 years for that to happen. By the end of World War II, only 45 years later, knowledge was doubling every 25 years instead of 100. And now a study done by IBM shows that every 12 hours, knowledge is doubling. From philosophers to the money mogul, everyone espouses the virtues of knowledge. Everyone talks about how important it is. Marcus Garvey said, "A people without knowledge is like a tree without roots." Helen Keller, "Knowledge is love and light and vision." David Bailey, "The best advice I ever got was that knowledge was power and to keep reading." Warren Buffett, "Risk comes from not knowing what you're doing." And Aristotle said, "All men by nature desire knowledge." So that final quote may be the most poignant when it comes to what we're talking about tonight. Because it is true. If you hear somebody talking about something that you don't know about, what do you want? You want to know what they're talking about, right? We all want to know what they're talking about. No one wants to feel left out. No one wants to be the person who doesn't know what happened. On top of all this, the Bible talks about the benefits of knowledge. Proverbs 18:15, "The heart of the discerning acquires knowledge, and the ears of the wise seek it out." Psalms 119:66, "Teach me knowledge and good judgment, for I believe your commands." Proverbs 20:15, "Gold there is, and rubies in abundance, but the lips that speak knowledge are a rare jewel." So knowledge is for the discerning, it's for good judgment, and it's a rare jewel. If that's the case, how do we explain our opening text? What is it about knowledge that puffs up? See, the contrast laid out in 1 Corinthians 8:1 is that knowledge puffs up in contrast to something else building up. That's a pretty big distinction. On one side, it means to construct, to establish, to increase in strength, to fortify. While on the other side, it simply means a gust of air, a vapor, or a smoke. So how can knowledge, this rare jewel, be something so shallow that it builds absolutely no substance? How can it be something that builds only hollow and empty vessels? The answer is found in Proverbs 2, verses 1 through 6. It says, "My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thy ear unto wisdom and apply thy heart unto understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver and searchest for her as hidden treasure, then thou shalt understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, and out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding." See, knowledge by itself isn't enough. The truth is that knowledge itself is just information. And understanding is what the information means. And wisdom is the appropriate application of that knowledge and that understanding. So knowledge alone is empty. And if it isn't applied with wisdom and understanding. And this is where we really get to the crux of the matter. Because Proverbs, the proverb we just read, makes it clear that wisdom and understanding only come from the Lord. And Proverbs 9:10 famously says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So we live in a world ever increasing in knowledge but denying God, the source of that the knowledge originates from. With no acknowledgement of the source, there's no hope that the knowledge can lead to true wisdom and to true understanding. And we find ourselves living in a world that is a prophetic fulfillment of our opening text. A world that's puffed up by their own knowledge and elevated by their own mind so that they believe the understanding that they're creating. When we think about being puffed up, there's definitely an arrogance that comes with it. There's a pride in our own abilities, what we can do because of what we know, and the decisions we come to because we have the knowledge. Like the rich man trusts in his riches, and like the strong man trusts in his strength. Our world has become a culture that trusts in its technology over trusting in its God. It's our ingenuity over his creativity, our inventions over his providence, our problem solving over his protection. It's our information gathering ability over his word. Now, I do want to take a step back here and make sure you guys know that I'm not preaching against technology. I'm standing here preaching with a tablet. But there's a problem when we hold this knowledge, we hold this technology in higher esteem than we hold the God that gave it. When we do that, we're building a foundation on a bubble of puffed up pride that will burst when confronted with the knowledge of the Lord. See, and I think if we're honest with ourselves in our moments of quiet time, of quiet honesty, individually we recognize this reality. Because it's in those moments when we're quiet, when we have to face ourselves, when we start to wonder if we actually have everything in control. Have we covered everything? Have we taken care of every possibility? Is our emergency fund really enough? Is the life insurance policy really going to cover my wife and kids if I die? Is the car really going to make it through winter, even if I'm changing the oil? Are my friends going to find out what my family's really like? And what would the church do if they found out about my past? Is this life that I'm living, is what I'm doing, really what I was created for? See, in the midst of an overabundance of knowledge, we can feel doubt. We feel doubt about whether this house of cards we've built our life on can actually stand in the face of the realities of life. So we try to reinforce our weaknesses by seeking more knowledge. And we try to find more answers to our fears, to know what the next thing to do is, to cover this fear that comes up, which in turn reveals more weaknesses in our life. And the cycle continues on and on. We seek for more knowledge. We seek for more information. And all we find is more weakness. As time drifts further and further towards its conclusion, it's here that we come to understand what Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1:18. For in wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. Yet once again, we see the reality of a prophetic verse playing out right in front of our eyes. As knowledge has increased, so has sorrow in our world. Since the year 1980, the use of antidepressants has more than doubled. And studies show that although people polled will not admit to depression, the vast majority are suffering with symptoms of depression. And it's increasing at a startling and rapid rate. The bitter truth is that despite of all the toys we have and all the conveniences we have, our world is simply more unhappy than the generations before us. Sorrow's gripping homes, while attempts to create our own joy have increased. It's a downward spiral that's quickly leading to an inevitable end. With no God as our builder, sorrows increase, and the focus of individuals turns inward. It's become all about self-love and trying to heal our own broken hearts. We have stopped looking outward and stopped looking to help our friends, help our family, help our neighbors. We're living in a world, just like Jesus said, where the love of many is waxed cold. And that brings us to our second builder. Knowledge puffs up, but it's love that builds up. And it's no wonder that knowledge without God is hollow and empty, because love is needed to build. And 1 John 4:8 tells us that God is love. See, the contrast of knowledge and love becomes more clear as we start to compare what we've already talked about with knowledge with what the Bible says about love. See, knowledge reveals our weaknesses. It reveals our shortcomings. But 1 Peter 4:8 tells us that love covers a multitude of sins. See, knowledge exposes us. But love provides us a covering. We've talked about knowledge bringing fear, 1 John 4:8 tells us that perfect love casts out all fear. See, knowledge puts us in the place where we feel vulnerable, we feel afraid. But love comes and says, I got you, I have you covered. I'm building a fence around you. See, where knowledge is fallible, where it's going to fail us, where we aren't going to know everything. Romans 8:37 tells us that we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. That means that knowledge is going to abandon us when we're on the battlefield. But love is going to fight for us and we are always going to win. It will not fail us. We talked about knowledge puffing up. But 1 Corinthians 3, 13:4 tells us that love is not puffed up. See, what you build on love is built on a solid foundation. The life that we live built on love isn't going to crumble away at the first thing that comes in contact with. Knowledge informs, and then it abandons you to the consequences of whatever your actions are. 1 Corinthians 13:7 tells us that love doesn't abandon us. It picks us up. It restores our belief and our hope. And beyond that, love endures. It's going to last through everything. Your knowledge is going to fail. Information is going to fail. If knowledge is doubling every 12 hours, I'm sorry, college students. You're wasting a lot of money. What you learn in your class is already outdated. Knowledge fails us, but love doesn't. So wherever and whenever we are weak, love will build us up. No matter how long it seems like it's going to take, whatever's going on in our life, no matter how dark it seems, no matter how tough the climb may be, love never fails. See, knowledge alone leaves you empty. But the one who is love will lift you up, strengthen you, and go with you. Love is your firm foundation. Love is a strength. Love is a base that we can build an entire family on. It's not that knowledge is bad or information is evil. But without love, they're worth nothing. As God began to deal with me about this message, he took me through the path that my life's taken. And I started to look back at what's happened. I could see where knowledge would condemn me. And it would say that I shouldn't be here now. And it was only love that made a way. And it was only love that sustained me. See, a lot of times in church, it's easy to see the person you're looking next to, or you're standing next to, or you're speaking next to, but you don't know their story. So let me share a little bit of mine with you. So maybe you can see that what I'm saying is real. So maybe you can see love coming through. See, years before my birth, love brought a preacher into a hospital room that was filled with death. Knowledge had already told the doctors and the nurses that there was nothing left to be done. In fact, when he got there, they were busying themselves unhooking all the lifelines that were connected to the lifeless body. The aneurysm that was on my father's brain had won. Knowledge told death to claim its victory. But when that old one-eyed preacher laid his hands on the dead lifeless body, love decided there was going to be a different ending. When he began to pray, the vitals started responding. Knowledge had to give way to love. But when knowledge acquiesced, the doctors rushed back in because the heartbeat started, everything started, so they could do something again. And they pushed the preacher out of the way. And when his hands left my father's body, so did the life that had momentarily returned. With the doctors once again facing a lifeless corpse, they backed away. And the preacher stepped back in to do his job. Again, he laid his hands on my father and the life returned. Only to leave when he stopped praying again. In the end, the hospital record would show that Jeff Schultz had died 4 times that day. But it wasn't knowledge that had its final say. See, ultimately, no matter what knowledge could say about life not being in that body, it was love that prevailed. And it was love that brought back the man that my mom would eventually marry and that would eventually be the cause of me being here. Then 9 months after I was born, as the time progressed, This time, life would deal a successful blow. The first time, it tried to take my father's life, and it failed. This time, the story's a little bit different. On my parents' way home from a Friday evening church service, they saw a bus parked on the opposite lane of an old country two-lane highway. What they did not see is that there was a drunk driver going 120 miles an hour the other way, approaching the bus from the other side. As they drove past the bus, the drunk driver swung his car around the bus into their lane. And at that point, there was no time for anybody to react. The two cars collided, and the impact of the collision drove the steering wheel of that old Ford Bronco into my dad's chest, breaking his ribs and puncturing his lungs and killing him instantly. My mom would have her legs broken in multiple locations. She still suffers with the pain. She currently has a screw that's holding her ankle together. Her jaw was shattered, and she had countless other numbers of injuries. All while the driver of the other car at impact was thrown out of an open window, and that night was able to walk away with only a few scratches. See, that's the reality of what happened. That's the information about this crash. But even in the midst of what seemed hopeless, in the midst of what seems unfair, love still found a way. Because what I didn't tell you is that I was also in that car. And these were the days before seatbelts were mandatory. Cars weren't designed to secure car seats. And at the impact of the crash, my car seat was flung through the windshield. See, knowledge says that there's no chance for a 9-month-old baby boy to live through that. But moments before the crash, love spoke to my mom, and she picked me out of the car seat. She says when she looked up, all she could do was shout Jesus and throw her hands up. She's not sure if she threw me in the back, she threw me up in the air. But she definitely threw me into the hands of love. Somewhere in the twisted meadow, when the paramedics got there, they found a 9-month-old baby boy with no injuries. See, it doesn't matter what's going on in your life. We trust our life to the love. It's not going to fail. Now, like, just too often is a case. We take these circumstances, we take these situations, and we expect everything just to go perfectly. And you see, because of what love had done in my life, because I knew about these stories growing up, I could never doubt that there was a God. I could never doubt that there was a God who had miraculously made me and saved me. And while I grew up knowing about him, I'm sad to say I didn't grow up serving him. See, I had all the knowledge of God. I knew all the church protocol. I knew what to do, when to do it. I knew how to stand. I knew how to raise my hands. And I went to just enough camp meetings to get my spiritual fixes to make sure I felt okay. Just like in the play that the youth put on about a week and a half ago, I was the devil's favorite kind of Christian. The one that was always around, but he never had to worry about doing anything. All my knowledge of being a Christian and all my knowledge about God, it wasn't enough. Because just like this world, I wanted to know more. Like too many Christian young people, I wanted to know what I was missing. Without glorifying the sin, I was playing in waters a lot deeper than I could swim in. We all know the old saying, if you play with fire, you're going to get burned. As I stand here today, I still don't understand why. But as I was living in my life of knowledge away from God, love decided to intervene one more time. I still remember it was about halfway through my senior year of high school. I got the typical Friday night call from a friend with an invitation to go somewhere I shouldn't, with someone I shouldn't, to do something I shouldn't. I stood in an empty house, and I opened my mouth to say yes to my friend's question of, do you want to go? I don't know why God took the time for me, but he did. And as I opened my mouth, I heard a voice say, just as clearly as I'm saying to you, if you go, you'll have no part in me. See, in an instant, that bubble of knowledge that I was living my life on collapsed. All I can remember from that point on is just saying no and hanging up the phone. See, I thought I knew what I was doing. I thought I knew where I was going. I thought I had everything in control. I'd always assumed that in the end I'd live for God. See, Pastor, I wasn't an almost Christian. I was almost on hell's doorstep. And that's where I had to face that barren reality. I didn't get off the phone and have a Holy Ghost breakdown or hold on. But I started the process of letting love build something in my life. Instead of just letting love impact my life. And that's the part that we each have to get to. It's not enough just to be here. It's not enough just to experience some things here and there. We have to make a choice, not just for one time, but we have to make a choice to let love be the build in our life. It was about a little over a year later, maybe a year and a half, everything in my life by that point had changed. See, love had begun to build where knowledge had vacated. And some of the process was slow. Some of it was instant. But my life had changed. My old friends had stopped calling, and my new friends were starting to form. I went from acting the fool to teaching Bible studies. But there was one more major part of this story. One more time that love and knowledge had to intersect. And this time, the hit was a lot harder for me to deal with. When I was 3, my mom remarried. And because I was so young, the man she married became my dad. He adopted me. And aside from the stories about my previous father, that was the only family I knew. Like so many other blended families, it was definitely far from perfect. But it was my family. It was a place where I could say, my family goes to church. I had something to depend on. I had something to rest on. But this day, my mom called me over and asked for my help because she suspected that my dad was cheating on her. She wanted to know what I could do to get some information off the computer. And a friend and I knew just enough of DOS to be a little bit dangerous. And we began to undelete old emails and old chat room histories. What we found was more than enough proof to convict anyone. See, knowing something happened would have been bad enough. But seeing what happened shook me a whole lot harder than I ever thought it would. My parents would go on to try to work it out, but you could almost tangibly feel the distrust. And as a young man who had just decided to live for God, I could see distrust turn to divorce. And divorce turned my parents' attention away from each other. And instead, they turned it over to my sister and I, trying to win our affections to their sides. Now, I'd heard about this happening. I knew it would happen. I expected it to happen. So I was prepared for it, but I watched my sister turn her back on everything to get away from it. And that included God. And in that moment, I decided that the simplest and the right thing to do was just stand for what was right. I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know what else to say. So I just decided I was going to stand. Everything was an upheaval in my life. I realized that someone had to stay the course. And as I looked around, nobody else was taking that job. So I really didn't see any other option. Despite what I wanted to do, I had to stand. And sometimes, in a moment, we can make really brave and bold decisions. We can make choices that are the right choices at the right times. And for me, this was one of those times, but it's often a lot harder to live with the choices we make than to make them. I wish I could say that everything that was happening never got the best of me. It never got over on me, but that won't be true. I was recently listening to a sermon. I heard a preacher say that the Bible doesn't say that God won't put more on us than we can bear. And he's right. The Bible doesn't say that. It says that he'll make a way of escape. But it doesn't say that he won't put more on us than we can bear. Because it's when there's too much for us is when we turn to him. I know that there are many here that are stronger than I was and than I am. But I found myself at that time being a place where it was just too much for me to bear. Everything I thought I knew was crumbling around me. Everyone I thought I could lean on was now pulling me every which way. And finally, I got to the point where I just couldn't take it. I was at the point where the knowledge of what was going on had overwhelmed me and had overcome me. And I remember dropping down on the edge of my bed. And I got really open and really honest with God. I wasn't just blowing off steam. I wanted some answers. God, how could this happen? How could you do this to me? I just gave everything up for you. This isn't supposed to be how it goes. This isn't what's supposed to happen when I give my life up for you. Everything I thought I knew turns out to be a lie. What am I supposed to do? I don't know where to go, what to do, or how to act. I'm not supposed to be the parent here. I'm not supposed to have to be the strong one in this situation. And I don't even know what that means. You took my dad from me, and the one you gave back isn't exactly working out the best right now. I don't know that I can even trust anything I learned from him. All I know is what I read in those emails, and it wasn't right. I have parents who are going crazy. I have a sister who's completely jumped ship. And all I'm doing is just trying to stand here. And I can barely do that. Why did you do this? What are you trying to do? You didn't make me and save me from that car crash for nothing. But God, that's all I am right now. I have nothing left. I have nothing to give. I have nothing. I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to be a man and stand strong, but I don't even know what a man is. Because I don't know if I've ever even seen one in my life. How can I stand when I don't know who or what I am? I remember stopping that prayer and waiting for something to happen. See, this was the time where I actually wanted to hear God's voice. This is the time where I wanted him to say something, to reassure me, to let me know something. Even just a posted note from heaven, God, saying everything's going to be fine, that'll be good enough. Just give me something. But all there was silence. See, I was no longer building my life on knowledge, but the reality of knowing everything that was going on was too much for me to bear. Jordan, I wish I could tell you I went and did a Bible study on what it takes to be a man. I wish I could say I went and looked up what it means to stand. But I wasn't at that place yet. Regardless of if I took the right steps or not, God still met me where I was. See, when nothing happened, I just got up and I began to walk out of my room. And about halfway down the hall, love once again reached in and to make something out of the mess that was left there. See, standing in the hallway, God flashed back to a memory to my mind. It wasn't some great, grand historic memory. It wasn't some sermon preached. It was just an image of when I walked past my sister's room. I remembered seeing a book on the floor. And in the image that flashed in my mind, I could see a poem written and I could read the title of the poem. And as you musicians come, the title of that poem was a two-word title, or two-letter title, one word, and that word was If. Written by Rudyard Kipling. I went and looked it up online, and these are the words I read. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for the doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies. Or being hated, don't give way to hating. And yet, don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream, but not make dreams your master. If you can think and not make thoughts your aim. If you can meet with triumph and disaster. And treat the two imposters just the same. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken. Twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools. Or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it at one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings, but never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve its turn long after it is gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you, except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can walk with crowds and keep your virtue, or talk with kings nor lose your common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, then yours is the earth and everything in it. But what is more, you'll be a man, my son. The moment I read those words, all the questions I just had vanished. The weakness I felt started to leave. And in just that little bit of inspiration, I had enough strength to learn how to stand. The final result would take longer than I have time to share. But the result would be that my sister would come back to God. That the relationships would be strengthened and the hurt on both sides. It didn't come back together, but the hurt on both sides would be healed. All because I allowed the right builder to build in my life. That wasn't the last time love stepped into my life. In many senses, for me and my walk with God, it was just the beginning. But regardless, love did intervene and changed what knowledge said had already been finished. I wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. And then I was supposed to be taken in a car accident. And then the statistics of being a sixth generation Pentecost meant that I couldn't live for God. I had to live only based on my parents' stand. That meant I was doomed to a life of complacency that I started living. And finally, coming from a broken home, I wasn't supposed to be able to stand. But love intervened and changed what knowledge said was done. And the truth about that is that's my story. That's what happened to me. That's what happened in my life. That's the start of the tale of my life. But as we stand across this place, the question is, what about you? What is your story? Where is your story at? What do you want in your life? What are you looking for? What builder are you allowing to build in your life? See, I'm here to tell you that it doesn't matter what you have or what you do not have. Love can build it for you. It doesn't matter what's happened or what hasn't happened. Love can create a different ending than you feel like you're destined to. Doesn't matter how hopeless it is, how bad the situation is, love can build a way. The doctors can say one thing, but love can change their report. And now is the time to make that moment, to make that change in our lives, to change our direction, to change our building. It's not enough just to be here, but we have to decide, God, I'm giving my life to you. I'm letting you build what you want to build. Let God be the builder in your life. Let the God of love reach into your soul and start to change things around. Whatever your need is, whatever your situation is, God can do something for you. The Spirit of God is here right now. I don't need to say anything else. If you have a need, come down here and God will speak to you. He will change you. He will touch you. He will take what's broken, what you're ashamed of, what you're afraid of, and he's going to make it something beautiful. He's going to make it something that strengthens you, that makes you able to stand whatever is coming, whatever is changing. God wants to heal you, help you, and grow you.
Wage a war, try to stop the very thing you gave your life.